Welcome to Know the Name, Know the Answers. This is your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and do we have a show for you tonight? I am so excited. Remember that you get to call in on this show and ask questions of our guest, and the number is 888-627-6008. Again, it is 888-627-6008. And if you're calling in on Skype, it is BBS Radio PR. And that's what you would be dialing. Now, the first Thursday of each month, names are read, and you can call in and find out questions from me, and I will give you answers according to your name. But the other Thursdays of the month have a great guest who's a specialist in their area, and I have found the best for you. Okay? And so tonight we have Michael Slupka, and he's the founder of NegotiatingCoach.com and is an internationally recognized coach, teacher, and highly rated professional speaker. Now, Michael's an expert on the topics of negotiating and decision-making dynamics that impact, influence, and affect negotiations in our personal lives, social lives, and especially in our business lives. Now, Michael also is the host of his new Negotiating for Success podcast. He has personally trained over 50,000 people of all experience levels across multiple industries in 31 countries how to negotiate more effectively. Now, his five-star rated presentations and negotiating skill training programs have been delivered around the world to small and medium-sized businesses, Fortune 500 corporations, and professional associations. Now, Michael has appeared as a guest on various popular podcasts and radio programs and on my other show, and you can get the link to that on my website, knowthename.com, and then just go to the schedule page, and you can see where he was on, so you're going to want to listen to him even more after this show, I'm sure. Okay, so I want to welcome Michael Slupka to our show. Michael, welcome.
Sharon, thanks very much. It's great to be back.
Well, I am so excited that you agreed to come on the show, especially because people can call in with questions. And I want to start by giving them a little bit of taste of all that you know. So how important is knowing how to negotiate?
Well, Sharon, it's you know, as I like to say to our audiences and students and listeners, negotiating is an essential life skill. And it's a learned skill. Some of your listeners or some people who may be calling in may be a bit apprehensive about it, and some people avoid negotiating salaries and jobs because they're a bit intimidated by the process. And it's something that if you get good at the skills and develop a few key tips and tools you can use, it can be used effectively to optimize your outcome. But it's something we certainly use every day with our families, in social settings, and most certainly in business, whether you're running a small business, you're an employee, or you work for a large corporation, it's an essential skill.
Well, I want to give an example because I want everybody to see you in action. I recently, because I've gotten to talk to you before and got to see a lot of your materials, recently negotiated for a much cheaper price on my deck getting it painted. And it literally saved me over $800. So if you are negotiating to get your deck painted or something else labor done at your house, how would you go about it?
First rule is get multiple price quotes. Now, when as a consumer myself, I encourage people, first of all, to shop and get multiple price quotes. Price quotes is a term I use when I'm encouraging your listeners, and I use when I'm purchasing something. When I'm selling something, I don't like to use the term price quote because it tends to commoditize it. So first rule, if you want to stain a deck, stain a fence, do something like that, and you have contractors, it could be college pro painters for all that matters. It could be a professional firm. You try to get three price quotes based on, of course, apples to apples and the same criteria of sanding, staining, quality of material, number of coats, cleanup, those kinds of factors, and you start with getting those three quotes. And it's very important for everybody to realize that when those contractors or individuals give you a price to stain a deck or paint a deck, that they're giving you their opening negotiating position, not their desired outcome. So the majority of people who give you their prices are asking for more than they expect to get. So first get quotes, then find a vendor that you feel like you're, or a contractor you're most comfortable with, talk to them, get some testimonials, talk to some people who have done some work, and then you may want to test their pricing to see if there's any flexibility.
So you're testing their pricing over your three quotes. Is that one of the companies that you would have gotten the three quotes from?
Yeah. So you're testing, so you test, you find a vendor that you believe or a contractor that will do the job. And if you feel comfortable with them, based on how you feel about them, I would call and say, listen, I'd love to proceed with this work. I got your price quote at X amount of dollars. Do you have any flexibility on pricing? And generally, by using that line, which is, do you have any flexibility on your pricing, the most inexperienced negotiators will make a price concession to you and say, yeah, I'd like to get the work, and I'll take $50 or $100 or $800 or whatever the math is. So once you use that line, people will retreat off their opening negotiating position, which is the original price quote they gave you.
So that's a really important question.
Well, it's critical, and that's the same, whether it's a checkout time or anything that you want to do. Do you have any flexibility in your pricing? Now, your chosen contractor might have responded to you by saying, listen, Sharon, we do really great work. You can check with our referrals and our testimonials from our clients, and there's really not a lot of flexibility in our pricing. Well, then you might have been able to, you know, get something else, but we call that broadening the scope. You might have been able to do the work earlier, or you might have been able to get some other form of concession from him in terms of maybe a bit of a warranty or an extended warranty on his workmanship, or get him to touch something, maybe touch something else up that was around the house, like, I don't know, part of the garden shed or something, that in exchange for paying him full price.
Oh, that's good to know too. So,
Sharon, what's equally as important is if you would have accepted their original quote, it tends to let the other party think that they could have asked you for more. So it's not like you're trying to chisel or barter somebody down. That's not the purpose of this. The purpose of this is to realize that most people ask for more than they expect to get and hope that they get it. The other thing is, if you said, yeah, sounds good to me, psychologically that painter or the contractor, whoever it is, would have felt that he or she left money on the table because you accepted too quickly.
Ah, isn't that interesting to know? I would like to, Michael, go through something I did before I bought a washer and a dryer, have you analyze it for everybody, because I think, well, I know it worked for me, and also how can we improve it? So this is what I did. I called on the phone to people, a lot of people sell washers and dryers. And I called on the phone and I said, I want this washer, this dryer, this model, this color, this whatever. And what would you be able to give that to me for? What's your best deal that you have for me? And then say, thank you. I will let you know by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning or 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, whatever it was, who I decide to go with. And I literally spent 3 hours calling people. But now let's say this one said, $1,200 for the pair. Then I'd call the next one and I'd say the same thing. And what would you let this go for? You know, what could I get this for? And they would give me a price. And if it was higher than the earlier one, I'd say, well, I really appreciate you giving me that price, but I can find it for this amount. And so I think I'm going to go with them. And then I'd see if they'd go lower or they'd offer something else and go lower. And I kept doing that and calling people back and then saying, you know, you gave me this price, but when I was calling, these guys can give me this price. So what could you do? And I ended up saving, like I did that for a washer and dryer. I did that for my refrigerator. And I have saved so much money, plus gotten free delivery and free setup when I've done that technique. Is that something that works for most people, or is there a better way to do it?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, creating a competitive price bidding situation where if you're after appliances and you call an independent, you call Home Depot, you call Lowe's, you call a major appliance retailer in your area, Best Buy or whatever it happens to be, and you say, listen, I'm after a General Electric, I'm after a Whirlpool, I'm after a Frigidaire, model number, you know, what's your number? Most people these days have trouble. Most retailers won't give you a price over the phone because they don't know if you're a competitor checking things out. However, your strategy was good, which is to get, again, you shopped around, you got multiple offers, and if there was a price variance on the exact identical washer dryer pair, and you felt more comfortable or you wanted to determine whether or not another retailer would lower the price, you could call them and say, okay, listen, I've gotten some competitive quotes. The only thing I would encourage you to do in your situation is to possibly not so much pit them, but I might have said something, listen, your pricing is just not competitive enough compared to some of the other proposals I got. You're going to have to be more flexible if you want the business. And then so language and terminology becomes important to me. I think, Sharon, what happens sometimes if you say, well, listen, retailer XYZ will give that to me for $995.
Well, I would say a different retailer. I never named a price because I didn't want anybody to be upset.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say that the strategy is good. And the reason why the strategy is good is because when people are giving you prices, they're always will give you their opening negotiating position. They will not give you their desired outcome. Their desired outcome is really what they need out of that particular deal. So they're building in some margin, and they're building in some wiggle room in order to be able to do that. And you'll never know what the wiggle room is unless you ask if they can do better.
Well, I remember doing that, and in fact, I just remember doing that on my washer and dryer and my refrigerator in a house that I was in literally over 30 years ago. And I thought, and we didn't have the money, but we needed the stuff because we were so used to buying old refrigerators or seeing which ones were out on the street that we could fix up and make them work again, even though they were out to be picked up for trash. But then you never knew when they were going to go bad. And then your food would get spoiled and you hopefully caught it in time and put it in an ice chest.
Right.
And so I had finally said, we need a new refrigerator and to stop this. And yet we didn't have a lot to deal with at the moment. And so that's what I did, trying to get it within our budget. And from then on, I thought, okay, I'm addicted.
Well, yeah. And the other thing to always remember is let's say you run into a situation where there's not as much price flexibility as you thought or you had hoped, immediately I would coach you to get your brain thinking about broadening the scope. And broadening the scope is, you know, something you did where you got free delivery and you got free setup, or perhaps they would take the old laundry pair and donate them to Habitat for Humanity if there was still some life in the product. So that's called broadening the scope. In my personal experience, we bought a laundry and dryer pair technically for a condo, and it didn't come with a braided stainless steel hose for the washer. And there's a big difference between rubber hoses and stainless steel braided hoses because, of course, the rubber deteriorates over time. It becomes thick and you can get some leaks. So, I didn't focus so much on price. I did get price, but setup, delivery, removal of the old pair, and disposal of the old pair for no fee, because in our community they charge you a recycling fee to get rid of it at the dump. So, I mean, these are the things that people need to learn. It's not just about the price. Also, in our community, you have to recycle corrugated and styrofoam. So the last thing I want to do is be cutting up pieces of corrugated packaging and putting styrofoam in a recycling bin and spending 3 hours doing that. So I'll pay a slight premium for a contractor for those things if they make those problems go away.
That is such an excellent idea, Michael. So how should one be prepared when they're getting ready to negotiate? What's the work that we need to do ahead of time?
Well, I would say that the early part of negotiations always involves planning and preparation. So the first part is do your research. I tell the story about this condo that I bought, which happened to be in a termite zone, and also there was railway tracks within 30 feet of it. So part of my preparation was, just because the condo happens to be in a termite zone doesn't mean there's actually termites. And number two, just because there's railway tracks 35 feet out from the front of this heritage building doesn't mean there's trains go on. And if they go on, at what time do the trains go? So people used to say to me, why would you buy a condo? It's so close to the train and it's like in a termite zone. and they don't understand that part of the research work is to determine whether or not any of those things are they're relevant or they matter. So rule number one is do your research, whether you're shopping for a car, same thing as doing, you know, whether you're taking a new job. I mean, people get excited about taking new jobs, but they don't often check out Glassdoor for the reviews of the employer where they're going. They don't talk to, they don't go on LinkedIn and talk to a former employee and say, what's it like to work there? So research and fact-finding becomes very, very, very important. It helps you frame your negotiation. You can start to set some goals and objectives for it.
You know, what's interesting to me is what you were just saying about research, you know, like who you'd be working for and what it would be like. Because one time when I was in Hawaii, a man asked for my book after he missed me when I was there. And then he went to the person that sponsored me and said, do you have any books left of hers? And because he had heard about it, and he read that book and really got it down well. And he wanted a job really badly at this firm that he was not the most qualified for. But he decided he was going to use names and what he knew about the names to, you know, talk their language and everything so that they would want him the best, even though he wasn't the most qualified. And so he went through the interview, and they did. They called him. And here he'd applied for this job before. And this time he was so excited he got called. And then he went, wait a minute, who am I going to be working for? What's the name? And he heard the name of the boss and went, because of the nameology again, said, you know what, I think I'm going to need to turn this down unless you're going to have me work for somebody else. And it was because he knew that he would clash with that boss.
Yeah,
and it would
be miserable. And it's just very important that people, I think people get excited about deals, situation, homes, employment, relationships, and they don't do enough research to determine whether or not it's something that they really, really want. I mean, I always say to people who are getting new jobs, someone says, oh, Michael, I got this new job and I got $4,000 more a year. Well, you got $4,000 more a year gross, less your particular state or provincial income taxes. You know, so what's your net? I mean, we get a lot of people, depending on your income tax situation by U.S. state or Canadian province, you know, you could 50% up to 50% of your so-called $4,000 can be eaten up by taxes. So take 50% of 4,000, and then it's 2,000. Divide that by 12, and then realize, you know, you're switching jobs and for you know $180 a month or something. You know, it's important, but is it something you want to leave what you're doing for?
Well, and that's really good to consider. So talking about jobs, how would you suggest to somebody that they go about to negotiate a salary?
Would it be a salary increase for a job you're already in, or if you're a candidate who got are you a candidate who would have gotten a job offer for changing jobs?
Let's start being a candidate. Because that's how everybody starts. So they offer you a salary, and you need to negotiate.
So employers are getting smarter, Sharon. They're not publishing as much as they used to. They're not publishing the range unless you're applying for a government position, and they have to give you or publish a range. So employers are getting smarter. They're not publishing the range or the compensation. They're saying, if you read the ads carefully, it says salary negotiable based on experience and qualification. So that's the first bit of research you need to do. When you read that, it lets you know that they are willing to negotiate. If you read the ad or you're pursuing a job and someone says it pays between, you know, $58,000 and $64,000, then obviously your goal is to get, you know, $64,000. You have to do your research to determine if the company hasn't said what their salary is and they're not disclosing it, they're doing it for a reason, because their job is to try to get you to work as inexpensively as they possibly can. They're not going to give you their ultimate salary package unless you're a superstar employee, like an engineer or somebody that's got the secret sauce and they need you badly. So the first thing is to determine, is it negotiable? Are they publishing this salary? Is it competitive? And then if someone says to you, as they always do in the interviews, What are your compensation expectations? My first thing that I teach everybody to say is to say, that's dependent. Why don't you talk to me about what the salary range is for this position or what you're prepared to offer? You're at a significant disadvantage, Sharon, if an employer in that situation can get you to reveal your range. And the other part of the problem is people, if they're anxious to get the job or they want the job, they'll tend to lowball their expectations. We call that maximum plausible position, which is you need to have an understanding of your worth. You can go on Google now and check salaries by city, by area, by job type, and you'll get a pretty good idea of what these of what pay looks like. And then I would certainly, if asked what the compensation was, I would say it really depends. Help me understand what the salary is, what the benefits are, what the vacation is, because there are things that are worth more than money to some people.
Yes, and I think that's so important. We have an email that just came in, and it is saying, okay, I am working for $60,000 a year and taking care of one division within a company. I think I'm being underpaid, but because the boss is my dad, I really don't feel comfortable negotiating, and I'm almost thinking of leaving the company so I can negotiate somewhere else. What would be your suggestion and advice to either get a raise or to try to work somewhere else?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's a dilemma. So he's working for a family member, which, you know, that in itself is always certainly challenging. I would say this, that I think he needs to, if he believes based on some degree of benchmarking, that's not just an emotional thing, which is, you know, he feels exploited or taken advantage of. And if the company hasn't given him performance reviews and some sort of compensation increases each year, and he or she feels that they are not compensated fairly and they're looking after a division, I would have a sit down with my relative and say, listen, I'm responsible for a division. I'm responsible for this amount of revenue or for running this operation and managing costs and production. And I did some research, and the research indicates that I'm underpaid. What do you propose we do?
And
what do you propose we do? And the person's going to say, well, you know, you're a family member, and I'm sorry you feel that way, and let's talk about what it would take to keep you. Or the person's going to go, you're a family member, I don't think you're that good at your job, and if you can find something that pays you more, I encourage you to look elsewhere. I mean, you have to be ready for every one of those we call them gambits or phrases that are used. And that's the way this goes. First of all, 60, anytime there's zeros in a number, Sharon, it scares me, because we encourage people not to use zeros when they're offering anything. I don't like $80,000 for a house, $200,000 for a house. I don't like $80,000 for a salary offer. I like finite numbers. And this person who's emailed, who said, you know, I believe I'm underpaid, first do some research to determine if that's legitimate. If this person believes that their skills are marketable elsewhere, then they probably need to do some benchmarking and see what they can get outside for a similar role. And if they're $8,000 to $10,000 underpaid, then they need to have a conversation. And I don't know enough about the business, about whether or not the business can afford $4,000 or $5,000, and I don't know what the person who wrote the email is looking for. I don't know if $2,000 makes them happy or they're $10,000 underpaid. And if they're $10,000 underpaid, then that's a significant gap. But what I would encourage this person to do is to sit down and have that conversation, is to say, listen, you know, I recognize this is a complicated family situation. I've done some research, and I wanted to come and talk to you transparently and tell you that I believe that I'm undercompensated and have been for a couple of years, and I would like to know, you know, what we should do about this, and stop talking and listen and see what the other side says. And the other side's going to say, well, let's try to work something out. And this person who wrote the email has to have a desired outcome, Sharon. They have to know what number would make them happy. Is it 63,995? And the other suggestion I'm going to make to the person that wrote in is that when someone says, like, what would it take to keep you or what would make you happy, you can't go in and I would not use an even number like 64, 68, 66,000. I would go in and say, listen, based on the research I've done, what would make me happy is, you know, $66,750. Because the other side, even though they're a family member, will have known they've done some research and there's legitimacy to the numbers. Don't throw numbers out there with just zeros in them. That's sort of silly.
Well, and it kind of makes the person think you're making stuff up.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. You're weak. I teach that to people. I mean, there's so many people shown that wink at. It's awful. They just and these are people that are doing multi-million-dollar deals in retail, and I'm often surprised at how little they think about these things and what they do. So, you know, I'm hoping the person that wrote the email can first have a fair conversation, and if the person, I think you read in the email to me that they were maybe a bit afraid to have the conversation because it's a family situation. I think you need to remove that emotion from it. And then business is business. And, you know, the reality is if they're performing well, they shouldn't technically be underpaid based on market conditions.
What if the person is afraid that if they do that, they could be fired and they're the breadwinner of the family and they're just afraid of being fired and not having anything?
Yeah. So it's like, it's like buying an antique car or something, or it's like buying a vintage watch if you can afford it. There's inherent risk when you try any gambit, and so the answer to that situation, Sharon, is you really shouldn't be trying to do this unless you believe that there's an opportunity for you to backfill your income by finding something else. I mean, there's a lot of clients that there's engagements I wouldn't take if there was other alternatives that I had. I mean, there's certain industries I like to work for and certain industries that I don't like to work for. There's certain industries that are more energizing to me than other industries, and they're more exciting to me. So I'm more flexible on my fees for those situations. But I don't say no to opportunities, even for industries I don't want to work in, if there's no other options on the table. So if this person is afraid that the person will say, I mean, I had that happen to me once in my career where I was in working for a corporation as a young man, as a major division of PepsiCo, and I had success for, you know, a number of years in negotiating salary increases, and I went to the VP of Human Resources and said it was time to renegotiate again, and he said to me, we're done negotiations. When would you like your going away party? And that was the end of that.
Wow, you couldn't even stay at the current salary then.
Correct. So I had to go to another job. It was a career mistake. It was a catastrophic mistake. I mean, I should have not left the company. I left for the wrong reasons, which were money. You get seduced at a young age by somebody who wants a skill set, and they pay you an amount of money they know you'll leave for, and then an amount of money that they know another corporation won't pay you. But yeah, I had a party and they gave me, you know, an Eskimo carving and said, thanks very much. And, that was that.
Oh,
so you have to,
I
went to, I mean, that was a classic case of going to the well too many times.
Yeah, we don't want to do that. So how many times or how often would you suggest to people that they go and ask for a raise?
Well, I think it should be tied to your annual performance and merit increase, I believe. And then within that, I always tell people, if you don't get what you want on an annualized basis, I would ask to break the annual performance review up or merit increase instead of doing it annually or on your anniversary date. We teach people, say, well, listen, I appreciate that you have a budget and you can only give me 4%, and 4% on my salary is this, divided by 52 weeks is that. Would you agree to revisit my merit increase in 7 months instead of 12? And that's another situation that would work. And then, so the answer to the question is break the increments. And I really would not start pushing the upper limits of what your competitive intelligence says that the pay that you can get paid. And again, like software engineers and jobs that are in high demand, Sharon, I mean, they, in some situations you can write your own ticket. So these are people are, you know, I know some people in the security internet security industry. I mean, I know one guy that changes jobs every 6 months because the banks and the credit card companies cannot afford security breaches. So, you know, that there's a person that's in demand and he can write his own ticket. He just gives people numbers and they pay him. But if you're in a situation where there's people lined up at the door to take your job, it's a little bit tougher to ask for money.
Yes, and that's something to be considered. And I had heard that, Michael, from the computer people I know, that if you stayed in the job more than 3 years, you were getting underpaid because the new people coming in are going to get more money than you.
Oh yeah, I mean, and that's even in top level sales positions now. You know, people in some of these sales positions, all you have to do is check LinkedIn and realize that many of these account managers are moving every 16 months. And they're showing a track record of moving frequently because people can't find talented people. So $10,000-$15,000 pay increases start to happen, and it's fairly easy to do. But I'm hoping that the person that wrote you can have a legitimate conversation. And I think, Sharon, even if they don't get the financial compensation, I think they need to learn from the conversation about whether or not they're valued. And I think we all have to cross these uncomfortable barriers in our life. Sometimes it's not fun to have that discussion, but we need to do it.
Yeah. And you know what, though? It says a lot about the person, too, when you do have the gumption to say, you know what, I am worth more. And I was thinking, I wish teachers could do that. That is one profession where, based on how many years you've taught and what your education level is, the districts publish it, that's what you're going to get paid. And there's no negotiation.
Yeah, and that's...
And so the poor teacher with the same education level and the same number of years in is going to get the same amount of pay as that outstanding teacher.
Yeah, because most of it isn't merit-based, right? I mean, it's
correct.
In some situations, it's shocking. They don't, you know, nobody's measured on the quality of students they turn out, or the improvement in the students that they've done, that they've undertaken in a year, or corrective measures they've taken to help people with self-esteem.
It makes it really hard to measure too, and I'll tell you why. If you've got all advanced classes, they're going to advance, but they're not going to have that huge percentage of advancement because they're already in the 90th percentile.
Right.
Okay. Like after I taught for so many years and then became an administrator for so many years and then went back into teaching, I used to literally say, give me everybody nobody else wants. And my scores were fabulous. My lowest kid would gain 2.5 years of growth. My highest kid, 6 years, always between the two, if I was allowed to teach how I knew to teach. Some school districts would say, no, you have to do it this way. And I think, you're not going to get as good of results. You know, let me be. But my results looked good simply because I took the lowest kids.
Yeah, merit, you know, merit pay, you know, tied to milestones. This is what I try to teach people who have salespeople, is even tied to negotiating, is that whenever I travel around and I ask the company, do they have an award or recognition for the top negotiator, somebody who generated the most profits, who stopped the bleeding of giving away too much? And the answer is always no. And then, you know, right now, how are you supposed to align the behavior of an entire sales organization to stop giving away things to customers that are of no value to them, that cost your company money, if you're not recognizing the people who need to stop doing it?
Yeah, exactly. We need to take our very short commercial break right now in the middle just to hear one more time how wonderful names are for you. We'll be right back in a minute and a half.
How would you like to be able to read other people's minds? Well, the next best thing is here. When you know how to read a person's name, you know how the person thinks, feels, and behaves. Each letter in our name holds a key to unlock our true essence. Our name contains both our gifts and challenges in this lifetime. Nemology science discovers personality secrets hidden in the placement of the letters of our names, including the first and last impression people remember about us. Sharon shows us how to interpret the arrangement of letters as outlined in her book, Know the Name, Know the Person. Sharon Lynn Wyeth created mnemology signs after 18 years of research and testing her theories and has supported thousands of people around the world in understanding themselves and others better. You'll enjoy Sharon's unique teachings as she shares her system to learn the gifts behind your given birth name. Even if you don't like your birth name, there are jewels in this book. If you're thinking of changing your name, ready to name your child, or wanting to get along better with others, this is the book for you. If you'd like to improve your relationships and change your life for the better, get the book today, Know the Name, Know the Person, or visit www.knowthename.com. That's www.knowthename.com.
Welcome back. You are listening to Know the Name, Know the Answers with your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth. And the call-in number is 888-627-6008. And I know that you guys send me emails at info@knowthename.com. Info is short for information at knowthename.com. And the comments that I am receiving via email is, I just want to listen to them talk. I don't want to stop and ask. Normally, we get quite a few emails and phone calls, and you guys are just fascinated by his topic. And I'll tell you, Michael is one of the best. And he has this most incredible website. So, Michael, would you tell us what's available on your website and what they can find and how they can find you?
Yeah, they can go to negotiatingcoach.com. That's negotiatingcoach.com. And on that website, you know, people that are interested in speaking engagements were there, that they can find out more about that. But we've also, you can also find, if you look at our store, we've got some audio learning tools that might benefit people. We're soon to, we'll be on September the 10th, we're launching an online course specifically for salespeople that we're looking forward to. But if people want to get better as individuals, a lot of people, you know, that work for corporations, to do in-house seminar, or a learning workshop, it can be expensive. But if somebody wants to get better as an individual, if you go to negotiatingcoach.com, just go to the navigation button, go to the store, and we've got some audio learning as well as some of these phrases that people can listen to. So you can download them, listen to them when you're exercising, relaxing in the office, or commuting, and you can get better at this skill as an individual. I tend to tell people not to wait for their companies to do something about training or professional development. They got to get good at it themselves.
And don't you have a toolkit or on your website?
Pardon me?
Isn't there like a toolkit or something like that you can...
Yeah, it's the Power Negotiator Toolkit. So that includes three things. It's the full learning. There's also a personality self-assessment, which is a 61-question questionnaire that people can take to learn whether they're amiable, pragmatic, analytical, or extroverted. The previous person that wrote the email, I suspect, might be a bit on the amiable side, meaning that they don't like confrontation. It's important to know, for you to know your personality type. It's not a Myers-Briggs. It's not like a test, and it's not a DISC profiling. It'll help you realize what your personality type is and your corresponding negotiating style. So you simply print that, answer the questions, and you get the interpretation of what it means. And then the other MP3 audio learning is the phrases, or, you know, what I like to refer as my greatest hits, which are the questions and responses that you and I have spoken about on a couple of your shows. So that's there as well. I think it's right now it's $99 for the whole toolkit.
Well, I think it's fabulous. Again, everybody, that's negotiatingcoach.com. And I would think once you pay for the toolkit, it is an excellent, excellent suggestive thing all the way through that teaches you how to do things and how to negotiate better, that it's not going to take long at all before you're going to earn that money back because you're going to be such a good negotiator. And then that savings keeps on going, you know, because all of a sudden you cannot unlearn what you've already learned. Excuse me. So, Michael, what I'm curious about is, how does decision-making play into being a better negotiator?
Well, I think the first thing is it's a cognitive you know, mental issue. I know my own personality type is analytical, pragmatic. So when I did my own, when we do, and I have all my family members take it, which might sound weird to people, but it's important to know who you are. So I'm analytical, pragmatic. So I have a tendency of carefully researching and carefully thinking about my decisions. And not everybody's like that. Extroverts and amiables have a tendency to be a bit spontaneous and a bit impulsive. So decision-making means this, that you have to carefully understand the criteria and the needs of why you're making a decision before you impulsively make a move and go to negotiate something. The critique on me probably is that I take too long and I do too much research, and that I think in some situations people believe I slow down projects because of that's my nature. But I tend to analyze a lot of things, and I have a fairly good decision-making process. It's not that I've never made a mistake. I told you, on this interview that I've made those mistakes, and I've made impulsive decisions. So decision-making.
But we learn
means,
from those.
Well, you learn from them, and then that's back to the cognitive thing. If you're not prepared to learn and grow from the mistakes you've made, then you're going to keep repeating them. I always say that to salespeople. You know, somebody says, well, I've got 20 years experience, and I always tell them, I hope it's not 1 year at a time, because if there's not aggregate learning.
Yeah, the first year 20 times, right?
Right, exactly. And I mean, it's that they don't learn anything. So the first thing, and what I teach people is slow the process down. So if you feel that you're rushed, or you feel that you could be impulsive, or you feel you don't have all the facts, or you feel like you're not sure, slow the process time, process down, take some time, rethink what you're doing, analyze, and then go back and try to negotiate or think about what you want to do in those situations. Talk to people, discuss things, and then arrive at a decision and then live with it.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part, to live with it. Because second guess themselves, or even if it's a good deal, they still second guess themselves.
Yeah, and that's a big problem, because it makes you not happy. And then you have people in life who make decisions. I have this conversation all the time with my significant other, which is, you know, does the decision make you happy? If it does, then be happy. Don't second guess why you did something.
Right. So is there anything that people can do, Michael, so that they don't have to negotiate, to preempt it, or is negotiating simply a part of life?
Well, it's a part of life, but I have this saying lately that being a good negotiator means that sometimes you do such a good job you don't get in one. And I believe this very firmly. I spend the majority of my time as a professional negotiator trying to frame properly the front end of the negotiation so that we don't get in one. And that's such a critical thing. So what I mean by that is, you know, you do your research, you understand what you're prepared to pay or do for something, and then if you frame things properly, you don't get into a negotiation. Like the first question I ask my clients is, what's their budget for training? What's the point of me giving somebody a fee that's $5,000 more expensive than they can afford, only to go down the dance of negotiating? Because when I find out that something is $2,000 or $3,000 less than what my fee structure is, I'm not likely to make that kind of a compromise. So if I know that up front, I can decline the engagement, and I don't get involved in negotiating with something where that's not likely to have an outcome. And Sharon, those people that feel that negotiation is fraught with, you know, controversy and confrontation and haggling and bargaining, and they just get tired from it, if they spend more time at the front end on decision making, then they won't have the stress and anxiety in the middle and the end of the process. You'll be able to live with the outcome.
So if you're framing something to negotiate it, and then I want to get to one more of these emails. I've been checking through the emails as you've been talking. If you're going to frame something before you start, what are things you want to cover in that framing, in that initial framing?
Well, you first want to determine the going in position or your opening position, whether that's economic or whether you're trying to get off work early on a Friday afternoon to go to the cottage. I mean, if your goal is, you know, you want to be trafficked to go to the cottage, but you have to speak to your boss of about getting off 2 hours to beat traffic, then that's your goal. If you want to avoid the frustration, then you have to have the discussion with, listen, I put in a few extra hours in the past month, and I'm prepared to make it up when I return. I'd really like to beat traffic to the cottage country. Would you see your way to being able to let me off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, and see what the person says? Instead of what they do is they don't pose the question. They're not willing to make up the couple of hours if they get the concession, and they end up aggravated going to the cottage, and then they end up aggravated all weekend long because of traffic and these related problems. So what I believe is, if you think about what you want to accomplish, which what is your goal, and then you spend your time figuring out what are my strategies to get that goal, then you will be better off. I have a story for you about, if you have time after you get to the emails, about a friend of mine who called me about an airline company that refused to give his injured adult son a trip home. And if we have time for that, I'll tell you that story.
Oh, tell that one really fast, and then we'll go to this email.
So a friend of mine called me 2 days ago saying that his 27-year-old son flew from Toronto, Ontario, Canada to Vancouver, British Columbia on a one-way ticket that was given to him as a guest. It was $700. In Canada, airline flights are expensive, and the trip from Toronto to Vancouver is 5 hours. This person fell off of a pontoon boat, doing a backflip, hit their head, got a mini concussion and damaged an eardrum, and went to emergency, and the emergency doctor said no flying for 10 days. Well, this friend called me and said, Michael, Air Canada said they will not reimburse him for the flight. They won't give him a new flight. They said they have to buy a new one-way ticket. Well, I asked him a series of questions. I said, did you put the ticket on credit card? No. 2, did you buy insurance for the one-way trip, for trip cancellation? No. The third question I asked is, did you get a doctor's certificate before you left the emergency room indicating that the emergency room physician told you not to fly? The answer was no. So I said, imagine being Air Canada. All day long, Air Canada gets requests from people who are going to miss flights, and they want no-charge flights, or they want free exchanges. So Air Canada's job is to say no. And I said, you did nothing to make them be able to say yes. So I said, get your daughter and your son to go back to the emergency room, get a letter from the physician indicating that it was the instructions not to fly due to potential damage to the eardrum. I said, then you need to call Air Canada and ask for the special services department. And then you need to ask for the person who has the authority to make a decision. And he got a $700 one-way new ticket provided at no charge based on following the process.
Isn't that fabulous? Well, this email comes from what she calls herself as a housewife. And she says she's not working, but it's her job to keep the family expenses down to a minimum. And that because they live on over an acre, they have somebody else take care of their grounds because they're an older couple. And she says that she asked her groundskeeper almost a month ago what it would take, because he can clean out the gutters around the house and do some other work. And he didn't get back to her. She waited almost a month. And so then she put it out on Nextdoor Neighbor, which is a website there. All the neighbors can talk to each other and you can ask for recommendations on what the other neighbors have found. And so she got a lot of suggestions for gutters. So she was going to call them in and have everybody come give their, you know, their prices. Well, when her person that does her lawn found that she had that online, he immediately called her and said, you know, we could do that for you, and gave a price. And the price was in the middle of the prices she'd been accruing. She doesn't want to anger her person that does the lawn. And yet at the same time, he's not the lowest and he didn't get back to her. So she's saying, in your position, what would you do?
Okay, two things. Having a horticultural experience, which I do have in my life, which people find strange. There's two things. The person that mows and looks after their property he or she probably wasn't terribly keen to get up on the ladder and clean gutters out. That's just something that someone said, you know, so they procrastinate and don't give her a price. So first of all, it's unprofessional and disappointing for him, no matter what he does for a living or her, not to have been forthright and said to the person, listen, I'll give you a price and this is the price, or I'm not interested in doing the work and you find someone else. So now we have a situation where she needs to say this. She needs to say Bob or Mary, whatever the landscaper's name is. To be honest with you, I'm a little disappointed that I went to you first to do this and it was incremental revenue for you. So it was another way for him to make a few extra dollars on a property he already knows and a property that he serviced for months and possibly years. So I'm, you know, and I'm assuming these people pay their bills and they're good clients. So right. She needs to express her disappointment, number one, because that's going to position this person to possibly make a move on his price. And then she needs to say, Bob or Mary, as a result of you not getting back to me in a timely fashion, let me repeat that, as a result of you not getting back to me in a timely fashion, you left me no choice other than to get other prices from other contractors. Then I find out when I post this, you're all of a sudden interested in the work. When I got your price, it's not the highest and it's not the lowest, but I'm not in a position to give you the work unless you move on price, unless you'd like me to get another contractor. You have to. So what she has to do, Sharon, is she has to put the responsibility for the process on the landscape contractor, not on her. What he did was disappoint himself, assuming it's a male landscape contractor. You see, right. What she's worried about, I don't want to offend this guy, have him not do the work, and then somehow he's less likely to do great work on my home or it interferes with our relationship. She has to say, listen, Bob, I'm disappointed that you didn't get back to me. We waited over a month. If you didn't want the work, you should have said no. I had to post it because we need these gutters cleaned out. And I've got price proposals, and yours isn't the highest, but it certainly isn't the lowest. If you want the work, you're going to have to be more competitive. And let him do the walking, not her.
Okay. I bet you she's going to love that.
And then the other thing that she should say at the end is, Bob or Mary, Bob, I don't want this decision to interfere with our working relationship. You do good work on the lawn. Thank you. So let me repeat that. I don't want this decision to interfere with our working relationship. You've been doing good work with us for 4 years. The other thing to do is to deal with the aggregate amount of time that he's been a contractor. Don't make it like last week. Make it 5 years if that's how long he's been servicing the property.
Right. Good. I'm also taking notes for her. Thank you. So I thought when she calls me with questions, I think you said it beautifully, but if she calls me with questions, I want to be able to answer right away on what you said. That is just such an excellent thing to do. Tell us again, please, about your toolkit, how to reach you on your website, and how they can take advantage of different things that you have to offer.
Yeah, I think the best thing for people to do, and so I always ask myself, if I was in someone's shoes, how could I learn in the most cost-effective way to be better at this? And the best way to learn is to listen, to listen to terminology, to listen to phrases, to listen to questions and to practice them, and to listen, when you're exercising. Books are great, but the problem with books on negotiating is that they're always written on the basis that the way we want the other person to reply. So go to negotiatingcoach.com, and in the navigation menu you'll see shop, and that'll take you to our online store, which is a Shopify store, fully secure. And you can purchase the full toolkit for $99.95. You get the full 6-hour audio learning program, which walks them through absolutely everything. You get the personality self-assessment, so people will know whether they're amiable, pragmatic, analytical, or extroverted. It'll also tell you how you need to negotiate with others who aren't like you. And then the third audio learning part of the program is the phrases and the questions, many of which you've heard me say on this particular program. Those are all on the audio program. You just listen to them and you go, okay, I'm going to practice that phrase and use it.
Well, and two of them that I've picked up this time just listening to you is, do you have any flexibility on your pricing? What a nice right. way of saying, can you do better? And then, would you see your way to letting me blah, blah, blah? That's right. Just a lovely way to ask.
And the other one, and I know we're getting short on time, the other one is, under what circumstances, Strone? So under what circumstances would you clean up your room? Under what circumstances could I have an extension on my checkout time without charging me a half-day fee? Under what circumstances could I get an exit row aisle? Under what circumstances could I have a room with a view of the river? Substitute that whatever's bothering you after the under what circumstances can I play golf both days this weekend, darling.
That's a really and good one.
And she might say, take me to a movie and dinner. And there's the win-win.
Yes, and I so believe in win-wins and that things can be win-wins and you just keep peace in the house.
Yeah.
You know, which is just wonderful. Michael, I want to thank you so much for being here with us today. And one more time, everyone, his website is negotiatingcoach.com. You know, I only have the highest quality of people on my show because I'm picky. And that's because if they're on my show, I know that you trust them because you trust me. And I want to maintain that trust. So know that Michael Slupka is fabulous at what he does, or I wouldn't have had him on the show. Again, his website is negotiatingcoach.com, because every week on Know the Name, Know the Answers, we bring you the highest quality of people in their chosen fields. Thank you so very much for being with us. And if you have missed any of this information, any of the websites, anything that we've said, you can always go to knowthename.com, go to the scheduling page, click on today's date, and it'll literally say my call-in radio show. And therefore, you're just going to click on it, and underneath, you're going to see everything that we've talked about tonight. Great notes. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. And Michael, so appreciate you taking your time to be with us.
Thanks for having me.
Good night, all. This is Sharon Lynn Wyeth signing off.